In this episode, we're joined by travel blogger Jessica Ufuoma, who shares the secrets on how to travel the world on an ordinary salary and a Nigerian passport. Let's travel and turn up.
Hey.
Hey.
Yo, what's good, fam?
Looking for the perfect travel podcast? We got you.
We're travel entrepreneurs that have been to every inch of the globe.
Representing the US, the UK, the Caribbean, and Africa, we cover the entire diaspora.
So check us out at travelandturnup.com.
Come travel with us every week, link with the diaspora, and become a better, more informed traveler.
We like experts on this podcast. We like entrepreneurs on this podcast. And today we're blessed to have both. Jessica Ufuoma, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you. So good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. It's been a long time coming. You know, I'm glad that we're finally able to get our audience to meet your audience and vice versa, because I actually do love your audience, Jessica. I'm not going to lie to you.
You do?
Yeah, I stalk your IG. Yeah, I love your audience.
They're amazing. I'm not going to lie. They're amazing people. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. So let's start the conversation there. Your audience, you've been building a travel brand now for 4 years, I think, starting in 2016. You are one of, I would say, the most visible diaspora travelers. And what makes your travel so amazing is that you give us insights, photographs, tips, everything we need to know. And you do it all on a Nigerian passport, right?
Right. Yeah, I do.
Wow. So, you know, yeah, I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, I can't travel because I have a green passport. It's not like you promote your blue passport. But no, you can. Yeah. So let's start the conversation here then. What gave you, first of all, what made you even want to travel to so many different countries? Because usually people with Nigerian passports just want to leave Nigeria and then that's it. But what made you say, okay, I want to travel around?
Well, yes, I do have a Nigerian passport. And one of the things that people always assume about me is, oh, I mean, especially when, you know, I say something about the number of places I've been to, they're like, oh, of course, because you have a blue passport. And I'm like, oh, no, actually, I don't. So that's one of the things that I kind of let people know, so that they know that even though there are, you know, challenges or barriers with having a green passport, you can do it if I can as well. And one of the reasons why I started traveling to so many different places was I went to Peru. Like, Peru was like my first big trip. And I went to Peru. I did like an Inca trail and I saw just how amazing it was. Seeing the Machu Picchu, which is like a seven world wonder of the world. And when I saw it, and I'm like, oh my God, like, this is amazing. I mean, before Peru, I'd done Europe, and Europe is pretty cool as well, but it didn't give me as much humph as Peru did. And then when I went there, I just thought, you know what? I'm going to travel. I'm going to keep seeing more places. I'm going to go to every area, continent in the world and experience things. So that's how I just stopped going to like the typical, you know, European trips, which are great, by the way. But, you know, as a Nigerian, sometimes the only things that we see are European countries or the USA or even Canada. But, you know, just having the opportunity to go to Peru and see something totally different. I think at that time, Peru was just not even a place on anybody's bucket list. But I saw it and I'm like, this is amazing. I want to continue to do it. And that's how I just started to do that. So.
Can we talk about the shift of your interest of traveling to Europe, other countries that you started traveling to outside of Europe? And what is the reason you started traveling to these countries? What inspired you?
Right. So Peru, I would say, was not by choice. Okay. So it wasn't like I just sat in my room and said, hey, I want to go to Peru. Peru, I had to go for school, like for an exchange. So I would say that I needed that push, or that's, you know, it was out of my hands. I had to go there. And I admit, the first time, you know, they picked Peru as my exchange program per se, I'm like, Peru? What am I going to do there? I want to go to like somewhere more exciting, like, you know, Greece or like Indonesia, you know, places like that are like on the typical bucket list of every average person. But I had to go because obviously I had to go to school and continue, you know, learning. So I went to Peru and, you know, I just saw how, even though things are not very popular or in terms of bucket list, or, you know, even though the names aren't as glamorous. Some places are really, really good to visit. So I started to look for other places that are, you know, in quote, underrated, but still very beautiful. Like my Guatemala trip has been one of the most beautiful experiences I've had. So I still have a very, you know, popular bucket list. I still want to go to the Greece of the world, the France, the Paris, but I always make sure to add the, you know, underdogs, let's say, and see what's out there. And to my surprise, the underdogs are really some of the most beautiful experiences I've had. I remember going to Greece. I liked it, but it wasn't my cup of tea. It was just pretty. It was nice. It was good for Instagram pictures, but that was about it. Like, but you know, other places like, you know, Peru, Guatemala, like I'm really a very like cultural traveler. I love to go and like, you know, go to the night, experience the nightlife, experience the people. You know, I love that kind of travel. If I feel like it gives me more bang for my money, bang for my buck. So yeah, that's how I just, every year I create a list of countries I want to visit. And then I just adding underdog countries, the popular dogs, you know, and mix it that way.
That makes sense. I always find it interesting how, I guess it depends on the area of the world you're starting from, but the fact that a lot of people, particularly in the US or Canada, I guess, always see Europe as somewhere interesting to come to. But I guess coming from the UK, it's like, yeah, it's just like around the corner. Yeah. Those are the kind of places that you kind of just go to anyway, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, that's so true. And Europe is great, don't get me wrong, but when you go to, like, I think at this point I've visited about 15 European countries. The more you go, like, they all start to look very similar, right? Except you're going to Spain or, you know, where you go, you know, Spain has its own culture, its own language, its own, but when you're doing places like Greece, Italy, Italy still has its own, like, huge culture, except you're doing those, like, really strong cultural European countries. When you're doing, like, Copenhagen, Belgium, they all kind of look the same at some point. You see the museums, they all start to look pretty similar. But again, like you said, it depends on where you're coming from as well. So, yeah.
So you said that you've been to 15 European countries. Can I ask you, how many countries have you been to in total?
At this point, I think 43 countries. Yeah.
43.
I always like to count that so that, you know, I can remember the, you know, where I started, starting from the bottom. Yeah.
No, and you know what? That's absolutely amazing. So if you, I want to get the audience to know a little bit about you then. So 43 countries, we've already established that all in a Nigerian passport. So that means for a lot of them, you've had to get like visas and that kind of thing. Really? I think the next thought that people would have is, okay, well, her papa must be Dangote or something like that, because there's no way, right? You know what I mean? There's no way that she's just this average girl traveling to 43 countries on a Nigerian passport. But that's not the case. Yeah. Like, let our audience know, like, you know, tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
My papa is not Dangote for sure. Let's just get that out the way. And yeah, again, like when I say something, so sometimes I'm very active on Twitter as well. I know you only probably know my Instagram, but I'm also very active on Twitter. And I do have also a fairly big audience on Twitter. And the thing about the platform is, you know, when you say some things, you get so many different opinions and it's just a different place entirely. But yeah, every time I post, maybe I post a travel picture, I say, share a bit of my story, like, oh, I've been to these places, whatever, I always get people say, oh, of course, you have a blue passport. Or they say, oh, of course, because you're so rich. So those are some of the two, like, biggest assumptions people have. And no, I'm not, like, my dad is in Dangote, but one, I always make sure to tell them that of the 43 countries I visited, I did 22 as a student. Okay, so when I say that, they're like, oh, okay, as a student with only, you know, money from my parents, like a stipend every month, right? And it wasn't like by any means a huge amount. But I always try to let people know that your travel style can be adapted to your budgets, right? So people always see the glam on Instagram or social media, you know, the infinity pools, the luxury bathtubs, You know, it wasn't until the point where I got gainfully employed and, you know, I started to earn my own money that I started to indulge in those kind of luxuries. But before then, I would take like $20 coach buses from Amsterdam to Paris because I wanted to see it, right? And those were not glamorous. Like, those were by no means glamorous. I wouldn't stay in like 5-star hotels or, you know, I would stay in like, you know, $20 per night hotels. Were they glamorous? No, but I really wanted to see places. And now I've gotten to a point where I'm more comfortable. I earn a good salary. I can afford to indulge. I can spend like, you know, my money like on 5-star hotels. But I think it's also a testament to say that you can travel based on your budget. It doesn't have to be Instagram worthy. I know we all want Instagram worthy pictures and, you know, that glam, but if you're really wanting to do that, then you can.
You mentioned 43 countries that you traveled to. Can you talk a little bit more about of those countries? Which one of those are on the continent of Africa? And how is it traveling on a Nigerian passport throughout the continent of Africa?
Okay, so I haven't done a lot of African countries. I think at this point I've done only 4 African countries, and I'll tell you why. It doesn't make me happy to say, but traveling within Africa isn't the easiest. I remember, you know, trying to plan a trip to Kenya, and it took me a while to figure things out, to really figure things out, like, you know, where to stay, what tours to do. It took me a while to get that information online for someone who is going on that trip from Canada. I don't know if it's different if you're traveling from Nigeria, but for me, traveling within Africa has posed a challenge. Like, I always start the year saying, hey, I'm going to travel to maybe 2 countries this year, 2 African countries this year. And then when I get into the planning of things, I just sort of give up because it just gets so difficult and even more expensive than you would assume, you know, it would be, right? Especially for someone coming from Nigeria. But navigating these countries with my Nigerian passport has been very interesting. It doesn't matter whether, I mean, I'm traveling within Africa or Asia or Europe. I always find that, you know, having a Nigerian passport gives me, like, you know, some kind of, I have to do a lot of explaining because of my Nigerian passport. People, like, there's 2 things. People ask me, first question, they see my passport, they see all the stamps, and they're like, what's going on here? Why do you have so many stamps on your passport? What do you do? Why? Sometimes I'm alone again. So it's like, why are you alone coming to this place? Like, I could be alone going to, like, Guatemala, to Belize, or, like, one, like, weird, in quote, country, and they're like, what's going on here? So then they ask me, and then, okay, I show them my work ID. I show them, and I'm like, okay, cool, go ahead. And also, good thing I have a blog, so I show them my blog, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's what you do, fine. But it's a very interesting concept, traveling with a Nigerian passport, for sure.
Wait, you have to show people your blog at the airport? That's crazy.
Yeah, sometimes I remember on a trip, I went to Bermuda. Bermuda, again, Bermuda is not like the most, it's not like saying I'm going to Mexico, because, you know, it's very popular. So people expect to see travelers, right? But Bermuda isn't as popular. So I remember going to Bermuda, and this guy was, the immigration officer was looking at my passport, and he's like, he was trying to stamp me in, and he was looking for space to stamp. And that, at that point, I had a full passport. Like, I only had 1 page left, and it was somewhere in the middle. So he kept looking, and it's just like, what's going on here? Like, you're alone. And I mean, my friend had already landed, so I was alone physically there. And he's like, you're alone. Like, what are you doing here? You have a Nigerian passport. Are you coming from Nigeria? I'm like, no, I'm not coming from Nigeria. I'm coming from Canada. Like, oh, so where's your Canadian passport? I'm like, I live in Canada. I'm a permanent resident of Canada, but I'm Nigerian. And I had to explain so many things. And then at the end of the day, I had to show you my blog. I'm like, hey, I just came to have a good time. Mm-hmm. I came, like, don't you have beautiful beaches here? Right? Like, you do. So yeah. Isn't this a country worth coming to? And it's like, yeah, but it's a bit weird. But yeah, those are some of the things that I experienced with my Nigerian passport.
Wow. That's crazy. It's weird that you have to answer so many questions for a holiday, especially like Bermuda, somewhere that it's not like you're going to, I don't know, if it was Russia or somewhere, you know, where like it's less of a holiday destination. I get it.
What are we coming here for? But it's Bermuda. Like, why not?
I could see Gina at the airport. Like, I am a co-host for Travel and Turn Up. This is the reason why I'm here. I could see Gina doing that.
One thing I did want to ask actually is if you have any tips for traveling with a Nigerian passport, because obviously I run Baba's Flight Club, which is a travel collective. It's global, but most of us are based in the UK. But I can 100% say that one of the passports I've had the most trouble with in terms of, you know, trying to help sort people out for visas, especially, is a Nigerian passport. I remember we had a trip to, I think it was Bali or to Singapore last year, and it just wasn't happening because I think this is one of the things that you probably take for granted, because I have a British, I have a British and a Nigerian passport. And you just take it for granted because there's so many places where I can easily just get a visa on arrival, or, you know, just fill like quite a simple visa form. But then when I'm doing it for people that have a Nigerian passport, one thing I've noticed, first of all, is that sometimes the visa prices are a lot more than other passports. And also, I think it was Bali where it was very specifically Nigeria and like three other countries that they have super strict rules for and nobody else.
Yeah. No, I think the worst or the most difficult visa I ever got was to Indonesia, so Bali. And it was just, you're right. They had Nigeria specifically there, and then I think four other countries or five. And you had to get a telex first. You had to be approved from the head office in Jakarta. You had to know someone who lived in Bali. And it's like, how do I know someone who lived there? I'm just coming to visit. Like, how? So those are like very, and I, again, thanks to my network. So one day I just randomly tweeted that I'd done everything in my power. I'd written letters. I'd called the head office in Jakarta. I'd done everything I could do. And then I'm like, you know what? I give up. I have to find help. So I tweeted and said, like, this Indonesian visa is causing me so much stress. And thankfully, someone who follows me is an Indonesian, and he sent me like a DM and said, hey, you know what, let me try to help you. So that was how I got like a chance to get that visa. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to, regardless, even though I live in Canada. People think, oh, but you live in Canada, it must be easier. No, you still have a green passport. It doesn't matter where you live. Living in the United States, it doesn't matter. What's the color of your passport? Green. Okay, you stay on, like, go to the left. That's what it is. So that was one of the most challenging visas. But when it comes to tips, what I would say is when you first start traveling, I think a lot of times Nigerians just want to go to the United States or the UK with a fresh passport. There's no stamps. That's your first ever trip. Now, every visa officer wants to know, are you going to come back to your country? That's the major thing, right? They want to know that, are you going to come back? You're saying, oh, I'm going for this 2-week holiday. Are you going to go back home? That's what they want to know. And you need to prove it to them that you can go back home, right? So that's by having a travel history. So have you gone to countries before and gone back home? If you've done that, you've gone to 2 countries and returned home, it's like, okay, well, he's gone to Ghana, and by the way, obviously you have to go to countries first that are, don't require visas, right? So like Ghana or Mauritius. I know Mauritius, you don't need a visa. They're like, I'll say 40 countries where you can visit without a visa. Go to those countries first and get a few stamps in your passport, because that would give a visa officer more confidence that, okay, they've gone to Ghana, they didn't run away. They've gone to Mauritius, they didn't run away. They're most likely going to go back home this time. But when you present a visa officer with a fresh passport, it's difficult. Now, there are times when it's an exception. So maybe you have lots and lots of money in your bank. It's like, okay, of course, they're not going to leave their business back home for this, right? So there are exceptions to that rule. But most times, if you know, you just have a regular job, maybe regular 9-to-5, you're earning a regular average pay, you need to have some stamps in your passport first. And that would give the visa officer more confidence. So for me, having the more I travel, the more I get stamps, the more it's so difficult for you to refuse my visa, because it's like, oh, of course, she's gone to so many different places. If she wanted to run away, she would have done so. She had lots and lots of opportunities too. So that's how you build it. You build your travel history.
Sweet. That's really helpful.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the reciprocated visa services of actually traveling into Nigeria. So I've heard you explain the difficulties of traveling on a Nigerian passport, but trying to come into Nigeria is not an easy task also. And they're asking questions like, when are you going to go back home? And it's like, to get a Nigerian visa is not the simplest task. So it's a twofold question. Can you talk a little bit more about the process of obtaining a Nigerian visa? And then also, how often do you visit, and would you recommend for others to travel, visit, and explore Nigeria?
Okay. Yeah, you're right. So the reason why it's so difficult to get a visa to Nigeria is because most times people like offices, so I'll say visa offices, they match the same energy. So if, for example, if you have a US passport, it's so difficult to get a Nigerian visa, and that's because it's so difficult to get a US visa for the average Nigerian. So you kind of match, you all give each other the same energy. And I don't know who started it first, but that's how it is. And with the Nigerian visa, I think the reason why it's so difficult again is because the country doesn't have a very good reputation abroad. So, you know, they want to try to vet as much as possible that, you know, you're coming and you don't have any ulterior motives whatsoever. But I know that if you go through, you know, Abuja, which is like the capital of Nigeria, you go through that embassy, you have a higher chance to get your visa approved. I would say it's not as difficult if you have all your documentation ready, but most times the higher the stress level of getting your visa is most likely because, you know, if you flipped it the other way, it's the same energy. Number two, to answer your second question, do I go to Nigeria often? I do. I go to Nigeria not as often as I would love to. And I think it's just because I grew up in Nigeria. Like for like the first 22 years, I didn't travel anywhere. Like I was in Nigeria. So when I left, I'm like, I know this country too well. I know like the back of my hand. So like, I'm going to just go and see other places. But Nigeria is beautiful to visit. Especially if you go to Lagos, if you want to party, just meet cool people. I think Nigeria, I've been around the world, and I can say that Nigerians are some of the coolest people you would ever meet. Some of the most intelligent, sound people you would ever meet. They're like so cool. Like Nigerians are so cool. So, I kid you not. I'm not even saying it because I'm Nigerian. I just know, like, when you visit Lagos and you know the right people, obviously, you know the people who know where it's popping and, you know, the places, the nice places to go. It's an experience. Like, it's such, like, there's no party, like Lagos party, basically. It's an experience. So yes, would I recommend that people go to Nigeria? Of course. And not just Lagos, there are other parts of Nigeria that are beautiful. But if you want like your first time, I think Lagos is a nice introduction. Like, it's just such a lit city to go to.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, you now, what you're doing. At the beginning of the pod of this episode, I said that you're an entrepreneur. Anyone who's gone to your blog or any of your pages can see that, you know, you promote tourism and you have a large community and you take them on tours. Like, for example, let them know how to get to Bali, for example. I know Bali is really, really big. And you just said how Bali was difficult for you to get to as a Nigerian. So. Is that kind of what prompted you to kind of start this entrepreneurial journey that you're on as well? Can you talk a little bit about that? And also, you know, is your audience mostly Nigerians? Because it feels that way when I read like your comments, but I'm not sure if that's true or not.
So first question, when I check my stats, I have more people in the United States who follow me. And then the second is Nigeria. But Nigerians are so expressive, so they show me more support. And of course, I'm Nigerian, so like they're the ones who are always in my comments, talking and just, you know, chatting with me in my comments. So my the bulk of my audience is from the United States, and then there's Nigeria, there's UK, and then there's Canada, and then every other country. But to answer your question, how did I start my entrepreneurial journey? I'd say that, you know, I've been traveling and sharing on my pages for about 2-3 years before I started, you know, I decided to start to take people along. And that's because more times than not, like every time I share a trip, people always say, hey, like, I want to go, like, tell me when next you're going. You know, I'd love to do this. I'd love to do that. I want to travel with you. And I realized, okay, maybe I shied away from that because, you know, I'm a very independent traveler. I would say I just like to get somewhere and do my thing, go to the places I want to go to and not involve too many people. If I'm traveling,
I feel you.
You know, I just want to do.
Yeah, I feel you on that.
Yeah. So if I'm going anywhere with anyone, it's like 2 people, 3 people max, and we're just vibing with ourselves. So it took me a while to wrap my head around that. You know what? Let me think about the bigger picture. I definitely want to help people travel. I also want to, you know, earn a living from doing what I love. So why not? So it took me a while to get to that point where I thought, you know what, let me do group trips. And it was so successful. I first started with Indonesia because it's been a dream of mine. Well, one of my bucket list countries. And I'm like, you know what? It'll be nice to do that with other people as well. You know, just go there, especially, you know, Black, African, American travelers, go there and just see Indonesia because everyone wants to go to Indonesia, right? So I launched that and like it sold out in like overnight. So I basically announced it at like maybe 6 p.m. EST, so Eastern time, evening. I slept off that day over, and by the time I woke up, like all the spots were gone. So I think it was just a thing of after building a brand, you have like lots of loyal people who follow you. And then you announce something and they're like, of course I want to go on a trip with you. So that's how I started. And that really inspired me to launch more tours to other places. We're supposed to go to 4 places this year. Unfortunately, they've not happened, but those were like fully booked as well. So I think that's how I started off, you know, doing tours and just inviting people along with me on my trips.
That makes a lot of sense. And so how are you finding things being in Canada at the moment? Maybe not specifically right now with coronavirus, but mm-hmm. I guess just...
in general?
Because you weren't originally from Canada, so I guess moving there, and how have you found settling in there?
It's been okay. I'd say that Canada is a place you come to when you want to just settle and like just settle down and just have like a very chill, easygoing type of life. Canada is very different from Nigeria. Like when I came to Canada, I think I was a bit restless because I'm like, why are people so slow and calm and just like minding their own business? I was used to people just, you know, being all up in my business. Like in Nigeria, walking on the streets and people are calling you, hey, how are you? Fine girl, what are you doing? Da, 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 da. Like there's a lot of buzz. Like, it's a very communal society in Nigeria. Like your neighbors could come into your house, knock on your door and say, hey, do you have salt? Or do you have this? Do you have, you know? So when I came here and just seeing like people just going about their business, things being so quiet, like you could be somewhere and you wouldn't even hear a sound, like no one was there, right? So it was a while, it took a while to adjust to that. And even like, for example, like driving, you're in traffic and everyone's on their own lane, everyone's going their own way, no one's coming to like, you know, overtake you in front. Like those were like a lot of, it took a while to adjust, but after I did it, I'm like, you know what, I value my peace of mind versus that, right? I think Canada has been great in terms of that, just having a sense of stability, peace, and zen, I would say. So it's not been bad.
And, you know, the thing is, so you actually represent what's happening on a larger scale with Nigerians, because when I was, I remember growing up, I was born in the States, but I went to Nigeria all the time, like every year, basically. and everyone I met always wanted to move to the States, right? Or they always had a story about how they'll be moving to the States soon, you know, once they did the school thing or whatever, right? But then somehow over like the last 4, 5, 6 years, maybe Canada has like usurped the throne. And now like everybody wants to go to Canada. Everyone's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to get one visa and go to Canada, man. And I'm always like, why y'all want to go to Canada? Like, how did Canada beat out America for like the number one spot?
It's true, you know.
That's the Nigerian dream. And yes, so you're right. At some point, it was America. Everyone wanted to go. Every Nigerian wanted to go to America. That was like the ultimate achievement in life. And then I think because of how relatively easy the process of moving to Canada is, like you can just apply online. You have your documents and then boom, you have your permanent residence, right? Even I had to, like before I moved here 6 years ago and I couldn't do that because it wasn't there yet. Like that program wasn't already there. So I had to go to school first, pay like a huge tuition, got a work permit, worked, got a PR. That was my process. But now you don't even have to do all of that. All those like processes that I had to go through, you don't have to. You could just be chilling in Nigeria, put in your application, wait for like maybe 5 months and boom, you have a PR. So I think because of how easy it is, that's why people want to move to Canada versus America where you have to wait a long time to get a green card. And even that's not guaranteed. So I think that's the major reason why people want to move here. And it's like, I just want to go. I just want to leave Nigeria, whether it's, I don't care. I just want to go. And then it's like, oh, of course it's Canada. Canada isn't bad anyway. So why not?
I really want to visit Canada at one point, actually, especially because a lot of people make comparisons, or you kind of see comparisons, aside from Drake, but especially in terms of like the slang that Canadians use. I don't really understand how, but I'm guessing a lot of it comes from the kind of Jamaican and Caribbean influence and the fact that that's something that we both share. And so it's so weird that you get a group of people that are so far away, but a lot of the vernacular that they use is very similar to how people speak in the UK.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. Like a lot of Caribbean, Jamaican influence in Canada, especially in Toronto. Toronto is very diverse. So there's so many different cultures here. Nigerians, Ghanaians, Kenyans, so many different cultures live in Toronto. So it's just like a fusion of everything. And if you're coming to Canada, definitely come to Toronto. Like, it's amazing in the summer. Like, amazing.
One of my favorite cities.
I feel so bad because you know, the corona thing. But if you want to have a good time in Canada, just come here to Toronto. Like, cool people from different cultures. It's amazing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you really get like Black communities, or I guess communities of people from different backgrounds?
Yeah, of course. They're all like, there's a Nigerian community, there's a Kenyan community, Jamaican is so strong, like the community here is so strong. And because it's so strong, you see lots and lots of Jamaican restaurants popping up every single time. Like, come here to get the best jerk chicken, like, even if they're not even from Jamaica. Like, you could see a huge Jamaican restaurant that the owner is in Jamaica, just because, like, the influence is so strong in Toronto. So, yeah, we do have, like, lots and lots of cultures here and communities. But we also have events where, like what was the event last year? Afro something, where, like, people came together. They had, like, acts from different cultures, different countries, and everyone just came together.
You keep mentioning the Caribbean. Can you talk about traveling the Caribbean and why Jamaica is your favorite country to travel? Okay, you didn't. It's a Nigerian clubhouse over here. So can we talk about the Caribbean and even the connection between Jamaica and the continent?
Oh, yeah. So I was going to say, like, when did I say Jamaica is my favorite country? Like, maybe I slipped that in because it's actually one of my favorite. And I remember going to Montego Bay the first time I went there. I just felt so at home. First of all, obviously, the skin color, similar. The way that their energy is so similar. They remind me of, like, Nigerian guys. They're like Nigerian guys in a different country, basically. just so... I don't know, not in a bad way, but just so, like, vocal, I would say. Like, they, you know, they're very vocal with their expression. And they have, like, we have this very similar music, I'll say Afrobeat type music. Like, it's soca music, but it's still very similar in terms of, like, the influences. The food, obviously, like, the food is so good. And we have... So in Jamaica, there's Jamaican patty, and in Nigeria, we have meat pie. So it's very, like, very similar type cultures that you see. So, yeah, I love visiting Jamaica. Just the parties are great. It's just a good experience to have. So, yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, I mean, well, the parties, you know, party after party is what we do. I was going to say, you know, on this podcast, we're all about promoting African unity, Black diasporan unity, trying to get people to travel to more Black destinations. So if you don't mind, I just want to talk to you a little bit about that. Like, you know, what does African unity, I guess, mean to you on how you view it? Because it's a very complicated issue, of course, with a lot of different layers. But if you could just talk about from a travel perspective, like, how do you feel like us connecting as a diaspora through travel can help, like, propel us?
I think it's so important, because what's happening right now is, well, before now, I would say, let's say 2 years ago, before the whole Ghana Year of the Return type movement happened, what happened was, like, people were telling our stories for us, right? People were, you know, white people go to Kenya or South Africa and come back and, like, just share their own limited perspective on what Africa is, versus us who, you know, we're African, we have the background knowledge and we can tell our stories even better and really promote the continent of Africa in general. And I think it's so important to do so, because we need to start to really take ownership of the things that we have as a continent. And when you look at some of the cool things that are happening right now, when you dig deeper, you see that they have their influences from Africa or from African culture. So the quicker we claim, like, we take ownership of our continent and really start to own the narrative of, you know, what Africa is, who Africans are, the better. And I think, again, when it comes to the travel industry, when people create travels, they mostly think about certain destinations. But for someone like me, or even, like, you know, established travel brands or tourism companies, we need to start to infuse more African tours in our conversations. We need to start to put Africa on the map even more, because that's what will really promote unity and oneness when we start to really take charge of what we're saying about Nigeria or Africa in general. So I would say that the more we all, you know, work together. So if you're working with, I've seen, like, all African brands come together and, you know, work for something bigger, because they achieve even more versus everyone working in silos. So that's what I would say when it comes to, like, travel and African unity in general.
We briefly touched on the fact that we're living amid COVID, but once COVID is said and over and done with, you and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, like, getting out and traveling, where is the first country you're going to when borders open? Where are you going to vacation?
You know what? I just want somewhere warm. Like, I think I just want to go somewhere warm. I don't even want to do too much. I don't want to do all those things that I always do. I just want to go somewhere warm and have a good time. Like, get out all the travel juice that has built up over the past, you know, 3 months. Like, just get everything out of my system and then start to, like, think about, okay, now where do I want to go to? But the first place I want to do is, you know, somewhere warm. Maybe Jamaica, Mexico, Belize. Just somewhere with, like, warmth. I just want to feel like a foreign warmth air, like, just go over my face, and then I'm like, okay, now I can start to plan other trips.
Once again, I feel you.
Yeah.
So what I was going to ask is basically, what is it like, what kind of signs would you be looking for in a place with regards to how they've dealt with COVID or the number of cases that they've had or continue to have? Like, how much of a factor would that play into your decision making, and how would you make those decisions based on different countries?
Before COVID, every time we did research, we always just thought about, you know, the actual destination, like, where do I stay? What do I eat? Those things. But now it's so much more complicated. You have to think about, you know, all the things that you basically experience before you go get to your destination. How are they like? What are the things that they're doing right now? So personally, I like traveling. So I don't think I'm going to take too long to travel because I guess I've done it so many times that I kind of know things that I can expect, but obviously with the added research of COVID, and I have more confidence in my ability to be safe in COVID. But I also have to think about, okay, so when I go there, are flights just going to be canceled immediately, like without informing me because of COVID? You know, am I going to be let back in? If I'm let back into Canada, am I going to have to quarantine for like 14 days? So there's so many factors to think about if you're going to travel now. Or you can play it safe and just wait things out and just see how, you know, see other people go and come back and be like, okay, they've done it, so I can do it too. But if you're going to do it first, then the onus is on you.
Fair. Okay, that makes sense.
So Jessica, as we wind down, my final question for you is, you know, we've talked about your travels on a Nigerian passport, where quote unquote, some people may say it's a difficult passport. Mm-hmm. So much of our audience is based in Africa. Nigeria, Ghana, South Africa, Uganda, Kenya, Sierra Leone. So as listeners are listening in and, you know, they have their own passports and they're saying, you know what, I want to get started. I know she said, you know, just start and it will help, like, you know, propel you, but I don't even know where to start. Like, what resources would you tell those people to look to? Like, besides going to your page or your blog, like, you know, what else can they do?
Google search, like a simple Google search can pull information up. But the only thing, the only challenge with Google searching is some of the information, especially for Africans, is not as updated, right? And many people wouldn't put in that much effort if people aren't traveling, if the demand isn't there, right? So you'd see that a lot of, one thing that I find is sometimes I go on the website, I'll send the name of the website, actually. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but sometimes I'll go to the website and they tell me, oh, you don't need a visa. But then I take that extra step to call the consulate and ask or email. And then they tell me, oh, you actually do need the visa. I'm like, why didn't they update it on the website? But it's like, well, I don't have to if maybe not a lot of people are watching or looking for that information. So, but I'll say definitely check out, you know, Google, some pages on Google, like, forget the actual name.
It's passportindex.org. That's the one I go to.
The one. That's the one. Passport. Yep, that's it. That's the one. So that, thanks, Tiffany. So that really shows you if you need a visa or not. So that's like the place that I spend most of my time on, just figuring out the visa process. But in general, like, there's some pages that are very dedicated to things like African or, you know, Black American culture or travel, for example. Travel Now is good. It's a good resource to visit. But I'll say just get negative into like Google searching. And sometimes even when you see things on Google, don't just run with it, right? Take that extra step to confirm. So whether that be asking someone who you know visited that country and say, hey, like, drop them a quick message and say, hey, I see that you visited this place, you know, what are the requirements? If they don't respond to you, you know, email the embassy or the contact person on the website and just find ways to get that information. But yeah, like Tiffany said, passportindex.org, I'd say, is like the biggest one when you want to start traveling as an African.
So we're going to ask for your big tune of the day, which can represent what you're feeling during the state of mind, like currently what's going on in the world or what you have on replay.
Does it, what is it? Does it have to be Afrobeat music?
No, actually, I thought you were going to pick Party Next Door because you're in Toronto.
But black music.
I have to write for my people. Okay, so my big tune for today is a classic. It's Ojuele Bye-Bye.
That's it.
Classic. That is a classic. Well, Jessica, thank you very much. Thank you so much for joining us. We love having you on. You're welcome back at any time. We definitely appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Please. Yes, keep doing your thing. Keep flying high, man. We love you and we're supporting you.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Travel and Turn Up. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a 5-star review. Find more information about any topics or destinations discussed by following us on social media. Search Travel and Turn Up, that's TravelNTurnUp on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. Travel more, say less.